Going live can supercharge your podcast growth. Discover how live streaming builds authentic engagement, leverages algorithms in your favor, and opens new promotional avenues from podcast and growth expert Christoph Trapp. Welcome to the Podcasting Secrets Show, where successful creators share their best stories, secrets, and strategies. I'm your host, Nathan Gwilliam. Hello, incurable creators. For this episode, I'm joined by Christoph Trapp. Christoph is the director of content strategy at GrowGetter. It's a growth marketing and market research firm. Christoph has written a 3-book marketing series, including a book about live streaming. It's called Go Live, Live Podcasting for the Win. He's an accomplished blogger, and you can see his blog at christophtrapp.com. He has driven content strategy and market research for growgetter.io clients, and he is a global speaker. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode, Christoph.
You bet. Nice to see you, Nathan. Really looking forward to it.
Can you start off by sharing with us your podcasting journey?
I've been podcasting for probably a decade, but at the beginning, it was very different. You know, it was super hard, in my opinion, to get your podcast even on Apple Podcasts, or I think it was called iTunes at that point or something like that. And I was just doing it on my website, you know, like record different interviews and kind of upload them there and didn't want to get too involved in the technical side. And then at some point, I started just recording them with my phone, which was then called Anchor.fm that has since been acquired by Spotify. In fact, I still remember when I did an interview with Seth Godin, who's, of course, you know, a big, big name out there.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on my couch with my phone in my hand and I'm interviewing him and uploading, downloading directly to Anchor. At that point today, you know, I do all my shows of the Business Storytelling Show are live streamed. Then they go to the podcast channels like all the podcasts do. And then it actually goes on TV as well, dbtv.tv, and which is the reason why it's 24 minutes, right? Because of the ad breaks. That's the spot I have on there. And so it's just kind of interesting how it has evolved from like, oh, we'll do it on the website. Here's an audio embed to we'll do it on the phone. And now I have this full-fledged, I mean, let's call it a studio, Nathan, right? You can see I have sound panels behind me. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lights on me, which seems a little overkill on a podcast, but I know we're doing video. So, you know, it's a night and day. And my tip, honestly, to people always is you don't have to start with 7 lights. Start with 1 in front of you. Start with 1 microphone in front of you. And don't, you know, compare yourself to my 644th episode when you're doing your first episode.
Yeah, definitely. Just get started. And I'm surprised some people that can even do it successfully from their iPhone or they can do it successfully from their MacBook. It's not as hard as you think to just get started. And then you can improve as you go. Really important point. What's the hardest thing that you went through on your journey and how'd you get through it?
Well, you know, early on, I would say a lot of the technical stuff, things used to be really, really difficult. You know, I mean, back in the day to get on Alexa, you had to create an Alexa skill, which you still can do today, quite honestly. But from the podcaster's side today, if you upload your podcast to Amazon Music, guess what? You can say, hey, Alexa, play whatever the podcast name is, and it'll probably play it, right? Because that's where it pulls from. So the technical side has become so much easier. So I think that's always been a big challenge early on in my career. And now, you know, since I've talked to so many different people, I think the biggest challenge today for me is I want good guests. And I always wanted to good guests on my show. But the first 4 guests, they could talk about storytelling, right? Nathan, if somebody comes to me today and they say, hey, I want to do an episode to talk about business storytelling, I will say, well, what about it? Like, I know that's the name of the show, but we've had probably 100 episodes on business storytelling, you know, so what's the different angle? So I think that becomes, the bigger your audience grows, I think the more you become, I mean, you want to make sure they come back, right? You want to make sure they enjoy it. So while back in the day on the phone might have been good enough, today I think the quality needs to be there, or at least it needs to be at least closer to pretty good. I don't want to say perfect, because what's ever perfect? Nothing. But I think that's definitely probably the biggest challenge right now for me, to make sure I get the right guests, make sure it's fun, make sure they get something unique to say. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have to make it fun. I mean, if you're just like, I don't care how big of a thought leader you are, And if you sound monotonous, I'm not going to listen to you for 30 minutes, right? It has to be a little bit engaging, even if it's good materials. A little sizzle and steak, so to speak.
Okay, so talking about fun, what is the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you in your 500 and whatever episodes?
644 is next week.
Oh, 600 plus episodes, yep.
Yeah. I like to recover pretty quick. So I don't know what has been embarrassing, but I think one of the worst fails probably was when my live stream completely dropped out. And what I mean by that is, so I have myself and I have my guest, and I'm throwing it over to the guest, and the guest is talking. And while she's talking, my stream just completely drops out. Like, I cannot get back in, nothing. Like, I'm just gone. And so, but it's still running, right? It's still streaming. Nobody knows why, whatever. But she's still talking. And at some point, she's done talking, right? But I never come back because I'm gone. So she's like, what's going on? Like, are you still there? And basically, at some point, she says, well, I don't know what's going on here. Must be a technical issue. Goodbye. And she just left the stream too. But that's kind of like, if you think about a fail, that's probably the biggest fail. Now, you know, on the flip side, what could I have done about that? Nothing, right? There's, as Jason Falls likes to say, there's so many dominoes that have to fall when you live stream, most of them out of your control. And so you just kind of have to roll with the punches when something happens. Out of 644 episodes, I guess I didn't do all of them live. So let's say I did 500 live. Probably something baddish happened, maybe 10 episodes, you know, so it's not the norm. It is the minority, but when it does happen, like, it certainly stands out and you remember it.
Yeah, that is definitely embarrassing when we have those technology fails. I remember interviewing John Lee Dumas once on a show, and my internet connection just died on me, and was so slow, and it was just so embarrassing to have someone of that caliber and have that technology. And I improved my technology. I got Starlink, you know, doing everything that I can to help prevent the same fail from happening again. But that is embarrassing. And you just got to roll with it and learn and put yourself in a better spot so that that doesn't happen. What are some of the things that you could do? Just like I improved to Starlink and got a better internet connection. What are some of the things that you can do to increase the chance you're not going to have a fail on your live stream?
Automate as much stuff as you can. And I'll give you an example. I think you do this too. Maybe I'm wrong. But so if you sign up for my podcast, so first of all, if I invite you on my show, I will send you a Calendly link. I'm sorry. If you're one of the people that doesn't like Calendly to book anything, you cannot come on my show. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
Maybe if you're like a really big name, perhaps. But I need you to, I mean, on my Calendly, right? I have all the stuff and it says, here's what it's going to be. Here's what we're going to be doing. So I set the expectation of how long it is, where it goes, blah, blah, blah. And then I make sure that people know that they need to have a good setup. Now, they don't need 7 lights. They don't need a highly professional microphone, but they need something. So it sounds good and it looks good, right? To an extent, as good as it can look. And I make them check a box, right? Yes, I understand that that's important and that's my responsibility. I also tell them about all the other things we're going to be doing. And then kind of it's just setting the stage. Then 8 days out, I send them an email automatically. And I say, here's what we're going to be doing. Just a reminder, I'm going to start promoting it tomorrow. If there's any changes in topics or schedules, now is the time to let me know. Because then a day later, I get an email for myself automated to remind me to now start promoting the show. And then they actually get another email the day before, blah, 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 letting them know to show up at the top of the hour. So I think this is actually very different from a lot of live streamers. So sometimes live streamers, they say, hey, we'll go live at noon, like, you know, whatever. And they set the invite for noon. And then as soon as they're done, they go, please show up 10 minutes early. It's like the doctor's office. And I hate this at the doctor's office too, because we just agreed to noon and now it's 10 minutes early or 15 even for some. So I usually book the slot, let's say noon, and then we go live at 12:15 or 12:10. Or something like that, because I think it's super rude when people do that. Quite frankly, I think it's rude when the doctor's office does it too. But so I think just to kind of set that environment, to have a few minutes to chat, to make it, to build a little bit of a rapport, and then you kind of go through all the different things. Like, hey, okay, what's your book? Let me throw up your book if they have a book. what website should we put at the bottom? You know, I have a ticker at the bottom, so I make him feel comfortable, you know, about, yeah, we care about your story. And I can tell him about what we're going to be doing. And I run all my episodes through Otter AI. So this comment is completely data driven. So 100% of the time, right, on the podcast, my guest gets about 70, sometimes 65, roughly. And I usually get about 30 to 35. And the reason I bring that up, because I want to make sure they get most of the floor, but they don't get the entire stage, right? So like, and they don't have to feel that pressure to just be talking and talking and talking. So tell your story, I'll tell my story, you tell your story, we bat it back and forth. So I kind of just kind of talk about that. It's a conversation. Just, you know, have fun, share what you want to share. If you misspeak, explain it as soon as you catch it, because we're live. And just roll with the punches. I mean, just have fun.
I think we got a little bit ahead of ourselves in that this show is about podcasting secrets. And usually I ask my guests, what is your secret sauce? What's your best secret for podcasting? And I think we just dove into your best secret. Is live streaming your biggest secret to success for podcasting?
Probably is. And the reason I still think the live streaming of a podcast is important, because building a podcast is actually really, really hard, right? As we all know.
Yeah.
And building a following. And I know there's so many different channels, and like now Google Podcasts is going away. And, you know, what if that was your highest performing channel? I mean, maybe it wasn't, but I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Like, it is pretty hard. And so I'm a big fan of really getting the most out of my podcast. And so I live stream them to LinkedIn, YouTube. And of course, the YouTube video now also goes to YouTube Music, because it's set as a podcast playlist. So make sure you do that. I also still live stream to X. I don't really do much on there right now. It really has changed quite a bit in the last year or whatever it's been. But I still stream there because, you know, no skin of my back. What's interesting about X, I get a couple hundred views of the live stream, which is kind of crazy, because everybody says they're leaving X, and then I actually get more views on X right now than I probably did 2 years ago. So I don't know why that is. But my point is, so that really illustrates, streaming to the channels where you already have a following, right? It can build your podcast quicker. I know it doesn't show up in your Spotify stats or your Anchor or Buzzsprout or wherever you're hosting your show, but at the end of the day, it still helps your show grow, right? And people hear about it. So I'm a big fan of that. I don't know if it's a secret sauce necessarily. I mean, I talk about it freely, wrote a book about the topic, but I think if you're launching your podcast today, I think it's like, I don't know why people wouldn't do it, to be fair.
Yeah. One of the biggest reasons I've seen to live stream is the algorithms. The search engines and the social media channels seem to preference, you know, whatever the new thing is that they want people to be doing. And it feels like live streaming is that today. And, you know, I've seen people that instead of uploading an edited video, doing it live, they claim to get five times more traffic just because it gets preferenced more in the algorithms. Have you seen those kind of numbers, or what kind of numbers have you seen of archived edited videos uploaded versus live videos?
So the one thing I want to mention too is that, so Spotify now is video too. So once you have the live stream video, you know, why wouldn't you upload the video file to Spotify? And I bet everybody else is going to be behind that at some point, that they have video. I know Apple already does, but not everybody has access to it. And I've personally never seen a video on Apple Podcasts, to be honest.
The algorithms, are you seeing a lot more traffic from doing it live as opposed to archived?
Well, I definitely see more traffic just because there is traffic, right? And that's traffic I wouldn't have gotten without going there. But how much it is really, as algorithms go, it's all over the place. You know, sometimes it's a few hundred, sometimes it's a few thousands. I also live stream to Amazon. So that's another thing to think about when I have an author on the show and their book is on Amazon. We put up the book on screen and we live stream to Amazon. So you have to apply to get in there. And one of my best performing live streams was on Amazon Live, and it was like 27,000 views.
My goodness.
And we were just right? And we were like, it was, I don't remember her name right this second, but it was like, they created this game on how to create your brand and how to like walk through the process, but it was like a card game. So we literally just talked about it and we like did the card game on air. and that people just watched it. And it was, I mean, 27,000. And just in context, you know, even if an average episode gets a few hundred or a couple thousand, I mean, let's say that's the average. I think my best performing podcast episode, just like the best, the highest performing one, was probably like 65,000. So even that's a lot. But if you think about 27,000, I mean, that's crazy, right? So
yeah.
So you want to multicast, and that's kind of the trick here, right? You don't just do the one channel, but you use a tool like Restream, for example, where you can multicast to all the different channels.
Have you ever used Dual Stream, where you invite your guest, and if they give permission, you can go out to their channels at the same time?
Yep, that's exactly how it goes. So like in Restream, you just click the different boxes and you say where you want it to go. Most the major channels are automatic, like LinkedIn, X, YouTube, you know, those kind of ones. You just check the box. But now you can also do Instagram, for example, but you have to go to Instagram after you start the live stream, and then you have to turn it on. So it's a little bit of a hassle. Plus, it's a different format. It looks differently from the other channels. And like Amazon, you have to do the same thing. You have to open the creator app, and then you basically have to go in there and authorize the stream to come through. But yeah, that's the idea. So it's the same stream. I always have a countdown early on, 59 seconds. And what's interesting, when you pay attention on the different network, you see it picks it up at different times because the countdown never starts at the same time. So you want that countdown at the beginning on the live stream, and then later you can cut it out. You can trim it out after the fact.
Okay, so you've shared with us some of the benefits of live streaming, right? One more way to grow your reach and your following. We've talked about algorithm preferencing maybe. What are some of the other key benefits of live streaming for a business?
One big key benefit, in my opinion, is you can really show your authenticity, right? And you know, you can show off what you're like, and you're having a live conversation. Nothing is edited, right? Like if you say something, it's said the way you say it. That's the end of it. There's no editing. It's no, there's no, you know, touching it up or whatever. The other thing I like is people can comment. And people can ask questions. And I even enjoy when people just come on and say, awesome discussion. I throw it up on the screen and I might even acknowledge it. Now, it depends how much time we have left, right? If we only have 5 seconds left, we're not going to do it. But you can throw it up. And I think that's a big advantage. And that does help with the algorithm when people comment. But, you know, just to have that conversation going. The one thing to keep in mind, if you are engaging with commenters and you have a lot of commenters, that doesn't always play very well on the podcast channels, right? So I'll give you an example. Russ Brand, when he did a live stream a couple years ago, like he spent 15 minutes just welcoming people. Oh, I so-and-so. Like that would suck on the podcast, right? Like you have to cut that. Like that works on the live stream, but does not work on the podcast. So you have to kind of weigh those different things as well.
What are the three most important strategies that a podcaster needs to know to be successful with their live stream?
You know, the biggest thing always is, what's your goal? What's the point of the podcast? And you really want to be crystal clear on that. I would not recommend for it to be, we want to drive $5 million in sales tomorrow after two episodes. That really typically doesn't work. I mean, every once in a while you see podcasts that go viral out there or something like that. But very rarely does that work, if ever. Quite honestly. So make sure you understand what you're trying to do. You know, some companies, they invite prospects on their podcast. It's kind of like a sales call, but they're not selling anything. They're just building a relationship. So make sure you know what the goal is. Make sure you know what the format, how does it look? So on my show, the business storytelling show, it doesn't feel that way, but it's very structured, right? Like, here are the questions, here are the segments we go through, and you kind of have the same thing, right, what you're doing. It's actually really structured. So make sure you know the format, but I would not recommend to ask everybody the same questions, unless they're always the same topics. But don't ask people the same questions, because it might not be relevant. Ask them questions about whatever they're doing. And then be ready to go, you know, practice, know you're going to get better. Listen back to your shows, see how it sounds, see how you, how everything worked or what didn't work, what can be better. And I think those are the main three things. I think the bonus tip, some people would like to call it that, I guess, is, repurpose your content after the fact. And I take my content from my podcast for everything. I create, I don't even know what they're called, videograms in Opus clips, right? I make them, I just make the short video clips. I use them as YouTube shorts, TikToks, whatever. So I think that's a good one. I also take the entire episode and turn it into an article. You know, I just did one actually. I did an episode yesterday with David Muirman Scott. And I took a segment of that podcast interview and turned it into my LinkedIn newsletter. And why not, right? And so because there's always in each segment, you talk about slightly different things. So each segment could actually be its own story, its own article, right? They're related, but they're not always the same thing. So I think those are the main things. Don't worry about equipment too much out of the gate. If you're going to worry about it, I would start with the microphone. Honestly, I think that's the biggest thing. If the audio is horrible, it's going to be really, really difficult for people to enjoy it.
What's your favorite microphone you'd recommend?
I currently use the Blue Yeti. So that one works. I also used to have one that was like hanging over me here. I don't even know what brand that was. But I think, you know, $100, you probably don't need to spend much more than that.
Yeah.
You know, if you search for Christoph Trapp on Amazon, you can find my storefront and my mics are in there that I'm using. So I think this sounds good, right?
Yeah, this sounds great. Tell me about the biggest mistakes people make when live streaming and how to avoid those.
You know, I think the biggest thing is people sometimes think about it like TV. You know, they think it needs to be perfect. They don't roll with the punches, or they kind of stress out a little bit. So I think that's the biggest thing. Just kind of relax, you know, take it easy, take a deep breath. Don't overreact. You know, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen anyways. And then other than that, you know, just get to the point of the story. And that might not even be a live stream issue. That could be just a podcast issue or maybe a meeting issue even at some companies. But like, if you're going to tell a story, get to the point of that story. You know, you don't need to tell every little detail of everything that happened before and after, but make your point and then move on. And the reason that's important, because a lot of live streamers and podcasters, they hack up their episodes, right? Like you probably do that, right? You do the little audiograms or videograms.
Yeah.
And when you get to the point of your story, you know what happens is it's way easier to get a good soundbite, and you want people to get a good soundbite because it's more promotion for you. And I can always tell when I have guests on the show, Nathan, that are rambling and rambling and rambling. I'm like, I bet you I will not get a single soundbite out of these folks. And then when I run it through Opus, there's not a usable clip in there because none of their stories are compressed. You know what I mean? Everything goes on and on and on and on, and nothing makes sense without
the whole story, which is also not a good thing.
You've talked a little bit about in the engagement with your audience when you live stream and putting some things up on the screen and how they can chat. Can you give us some tips and secrets about how to engage your audience when you're live streaming?
Well, first of all, what I do is I promote my live stream a week out. So every week, you know, a week before, I get the notification to push it out there. So that's the first way to do it. You know, tag the other person that's in it, and then it's kind of out there. If the algorithm does something with it already, fine. If it doesn't, fine too. And you can also invite people. You can actually go in there because it creates an event on LinkedIn, for example, and invite your connections. I wouldn't probably do that every week, but you could sometimes, or if you have a specific topic for specific people. The other way to engage people, this is only available in Restream. Maybe I'm wrong by now, but they were the first ones to market with this. They have a simulcast feature. So if you come on my show, I start promoting our show, and then I send you the link to simulcast so you can actually set up your own Restream account for free. And then it pulls over the stream when we go live and it pushes it to your network, like to your LinkedIn, to your YouTube, wherever you want it to go, natively, like you're the live streamer. And then when people comment on your page, it shows up in our live stream together and we can pull it up. So that's a really, really good way to do that as well. And then encourage people, you know, once you're on air, like, you know, tell people, hey, if you have a question, if you have a comment, feel free to chime in, leave a comment, you know, we'll try to answer it. Some people put it on the lower third. Currently, I usually have the guest's website on the lower third. They don't have a website where it's super long. Maybe I put something else there, or maybe just go without it. But I've seen Amazon live streamers do that especially. They do make sure you follow, especially the follow button used to be very hidden, so they would try to get people to follow you. But they also say, ask your questions in the comments, so encourage people to participate. And then when they do, make sure you respond.
Do you find you're able to do that by yourself, or do you need a producer, someone sitting next to you who's helping you weed through the comments and respond to them? And
well, when I do my show, I do it by myself. It's just me. But when I do the same thing for clients as the producer. And certainly, you know, it is a lot of work to do everything by yourself because you can't read and talk at the same time, right, as we know. And so if you have the luxury of a producer to kind of flip back and forth, look at the comments, you know, put up different things on the screen, I would highly recommend it. But, you know, is it truly necessary? Can you do it by yourself? It depends. Like, I do it by myself, but I've also done it for 600 some episodes or 500 some episodes, I guess, for the live stream. And, but yeah, if you have the luxury to have somebody help you produce, I'd recommend that for sure.
Can you share with us a particularly memorable or impactful moment that resonated with you from your live streaming experience?
You know, every time I learn something new, I think that's memorable to me. It's also memorable when you have people on the show that you kind of idolized or, you know, you followed for a long time. I mean, I had Jeff Bulas on the show and Seth Godin. I mentioned that, you know, yeah, even David Meerman Scott, Joe Polizzi. I mean, all these people, and they're like, you know, big names in the industry. So it's always kind of neat to get them on the show and to actually talk to them. And I always liken it to, you know, so, well, some of them would have coffee with me. I know that. But there's many big names. If you were to call them and say, hey, do you want to have virtual coffee? They're like, No, I'm busy. But if you invite them on your podcast, right, like they might be willing to do that. And it's really just like you have coffee with them because you're just picking their brain and you're just talking with them. And so I think those things are always great. Every time I figure out some new way of doing something, I love to do that. I still think there's a future of live streaming in the metaverse. I know AI has pushed metaverse out of the headlines a little bit in the last 14 months or so, or 15 months. But there is some future there. I don't know what it is, because quite frankly, if this was in, 3D or whatever, like, who cares? So look at me in 3D, right? This is not action sports. But there's still something at some point. I'm looking forward to figuring it out at some point. But it's probably not going to be this year, is my guess.
Okay, so talking about what's coming, what do you see as the future of live streaming? Anything you're seeing on the horizon that we should be expecting?
I mean, I think the advances, you know, you never know what some of these companies come up with. When Restream rolled out the simulcasting, I'm like, this is awesome. I would have never even thought about that this is necessary, but it totally is, right? It's super helpful when your guest can actually just pick the stream and put it on their own page automatically. So what other advances are coming? I don't know. I think, you know, for companies that are hopping into the game today, I think the biggest thing really truly is to figure out what you're going to do, what you're going to talk about, and how you're going to make it unique. You can't just talk about the same old crap, right? And you just kind of have to make it fun. But I'm sure technology will continue to evolve. I think the metaverse somehow, but, and now, you know, I used to make the joke, Nathan, that we can't live stream in the metaverse because I don't like walking around without legs. And then Mitch Jacks, you know, because the characters used to have no legs. It was just like the upper body, totally weird. And then Mitch Jackson reminded me that, well, now there are legs. So there are, but the audio is horrible, in my opinion, is completely horrible. So you can't repurpose it, but there's something there, you know, to make it more interactive. And, you know, maybe it looks like people sitting next to each other at a table, right? So like when people join and they want to comment, we're all sitting around a table. And you and I are talking, and they're sitting there. Like, I don't know. It's, who knows? At this point, it's a little premature, but there's something there.
Christoph, if our audience has enjoyed this episode as I have, and they want to learn more about you and your products and services, what are the best ways for them to do that?
Yeah, I really appreciate you inviting me on. I always enjoy chatting with you. ChristophTrapp.com is my blog. You can check that out. My podcast is on there. In my day job, I work at GrowGetter.io, growth marketing in the market research field. So feel free to reach out there as well if you work there. And yeah, happy to work with you, and hope to see you around. Check out my blog, listen to the podcast, and always happy to hear your thoughts.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing so much value with our audience.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Here are my key takeaways from this episode. Number one, live streaming your podcast episodes can help grow your audience quicker since it taps into the audience on various social platforms. It also helps show your authenticity. Number two, when live streaming, automate as much as possible, such as sending reminders to guests ahead of time to prepare them. Number three, have a clear goal, format, and topic focus for your podcast before going live. Don't overprepare scripted questions, though. Keep it a natural conversation. Number four, make sure your audio sounds great. Video quality is secondary, but also very important. Number five, repurpose segments from your live podcast into short videograms or articles to further distribute your content. Each segment can often stand alone as its own piece of content. Number six, encourage audience interaction through real-time comments during the live show. Feature their comments on screen and verbally react to keep them engaged. And finally, number seven, there may be future potential for more interactive podcast formats leveraging virtual reality and metaverse technology, but the space is still premature for widespread adoption as of now. If you're looking for a great all-in-one podcasting platform with 35 integrated modules, you can get a free trial at podup.com. Thanks for joining us for this episode. I wish you success as you grow your podcast through live streaming.